God in prayer. Just join me in prayer. God, we just welcome your presence among us this morning. We thank you that you are the same yesterday, today, and forever. And throughout all generations, you have been faithful. God, we just thank you for the opportunity that you have given us this morning to come together as leaders in the church, to dream, to think, to reflect, and to plan. And above all, Lord, to align ourselves with your will. And so, God, we just pray that by your Spirit that you would guide our thoughts and our interactions. And all of it, Lord, we pray that it may add to the glory of your name, the growth of your kingdom. And through that, Lord, that we may see your church busy about being what you call us to be, a church that is not simply a place where we gather together, but a place where we go out into the world and make your name great. And so we pray your blessing upon our time this morning in Jesus' name. Amen. A pastor tells this story. This goes back a number of years ago, and he was working with a number of young people. And one day he thought that he would do is he would invite 100 of those young people who were basically from his neighborhood into the church. And as people started seeing all of these 100 youth starting to come to church, one of the church leaders was not at all happy, not pleased at all. And this is what he said. He says, "I want to make one thing perfectly clear," he said. "These young people you brought into our church have to be kept separate. They have to be kept away." And he says, "We've worked hard to keep our children away from those kinds of people." Well, this pastor and this guy, this leader, they had a bit of a so-called frank conversation about all of that. But in the end, they talked about something that I want to talk about today. And this is what the pastor and this leader talked about. They said, "I'm tired of hearing about the generation gap. I want to build a generational bridge." And I want to talk a bit about that today with you. How can we build bridges to connect generations? Now, this is a bit of a picture of Gosnell's Church, and I sort of separated it between your communicant and baptized members. You know, in your church, you have 102 people that are baptized. I'm assuming that most of these are children or the younger generation or maybe a few young adults who have not yet come to that point where they have, you know, publicly professed their faith. So you have about 100 and a third of the congregation, and about two-thirds of the congregation are communicant members. And I look at statistics like that, and it tells me a number of things about your church. One is that you got a bunch of children, and maybe you have bought into what Dick Smith has been saying about lately on television. If you watched the news, we just talked a little bit about the news. Dick Smith said that in Australia, you know, we should limit the number of children to about 2 on average. Otherwise, Australia will burst out of its seams within this century. He said we're going to reach 100 million people. I don't know if those statistics are necessarily warranted. But anyways, maybe that's what's been happening here. Not everyone has lots of kids. Generally, when I look at a church, I like to see the average about 50-50. And what it just basically says to me about Gosnell's Church is that it's starting to be an aging church. You know, you got probably a lot more gray hairs than kids running around this place. But whatever it is, we got this gap between our youth, our young children, our young people, and we got our adults and our aging congregation. What can we do as a church to somehow close the gap? Let me just start with this exercise. In front of you, you see a bunch of those index cards. Just take one of those cards. And I want you, first of all, just to make a list. Just take a minute or so to make the first list. What I want you to do is I want you to write down all the sermons and the lessons and the devotionals that you remember that had a deep spiritual impact on you as a teenager. Just make a list of them. When I was a young person, there's one sermon that I remember. I was at a cadet retreat. We had cadets and a lot of young people come together, and I remember the preacher, he gave a sermon, and his big idea was that God has no grandchildren. He only has children. I'll never forget that. When I was in my late teens, I had a booklet that was written by David Wilkerson, that was written for young people. And I don't know how I ever got that. And I still have it today, actually. And I would read and reread and reread that little booklet. And it talked about all the issues that young people struggled against. It impacted me. I want you to just turn to the person beside you and just share your lists. When I was probably 10 or 11 years of age, I had a cadet counselor. His name was Mr. Kuivenhoven. I don't think he knew how to tie a knot or build a fire or even put up a tent. But there was something about this man that just showed me that he knew God. He had this wonderful, loving relationship with Jesus. And I hungered for that as a youngster. I said, you know, one day I'd like to be like him. I'd like to have that same kind of desire. My later youth, there was two youth workers that our church, we didn't have a youth group at all in our church at that time. We were probably a church of about 600-700 people. We didn't have a running youth program because it wasn't the thing that was going on in those days. And these two fellows, Mr. Tietzma, him and his wife in particular, but then another couple as well, they came on board they helped us to start up a youth group. There was three young people. I was one of them, and we started up a youth group. And I just thought the investment that they made into my life during those days when, you know, we didn't have a youth program and all of that, but they wanted to get something going. I'll never forget that. Chuck Fenema was my pastor in my formative years. He and I would have often long conversations, he actually was the person that encouraged me and challenged me to go into the ministry. When I eventually went on to university and eventually on to seminary, people like, Marion Snapper, who was one of my professors, just invested, I don't know how many times, he would just get me over to come to his house because he knew I was a bit of a handyman, and he said, can you fix a downspout that I have on my house? Well, it took me all of 10 minutes to fix that downspout, but then he would probably spend the next 2 hours over a cup of tea or coffee just chatting to me about faith, God, life, and he would just walk a journey with me and just left a huge impression on me. My mom, a very godly person who has a deep love for Jesus and still to this day, I saw something in my father-in-law that... when I started dating my current wife, because this will have another one, I eventually married his youngest daughter, but when I started dating her, there's just something about him that just said, you know what, this guy just seems to have life in balance, when I grow up, I hopefully one day I could get my life into that kind of balance as well. Just a few of the people that in my youth, in my young people age, that had an impact on my life. Just turn to that person and just share your list with each other. Who are those people that impacted your life spiritually? All right. Just wanted you to have, a little go at it with each other. So compare your two lists. The list of all the sermons, devotionals, and stuff that you remember as a young person, and your list of the people that might have impacted your life. Which list is longer? Seven, definitely. Yeah. And more importantly, perhaps, what list do you consider most influential, that has influenced you the most to where you are at today spiritually? I think the answer to that question illustrates very much what I want to talk to you about today, and that is the importance of intergenerational ministry, especially with within a church. So let's just first of all get some definitions down. What do we mean by an intergenerational ministry approach? It's so important to understand what this means. And when I'm talking about an intergenerational ministry, what we're talking about is that we view the roles of parents and the surrounding adult community as the primary influence on a young person's spiritual formation. And so we're looking at, you know, the adults within the church, and what we're saying is that these adults are the ones that are going to have the biggest impact spiritually on the lives of the kids, on the young people, on the young adults. And when we think about ministry in general, an intergenerational ministry, we're looking at a ministry that are ministries that are designed to create opportunities for spiritual growth across generational lines, while still offering programs that meet the age-specific appropriate needs of both younger and older people. And so we got two groups of people within the church. We got the younger folk and we got the older folk. Yeah, we're going to have some specific ministries that are age-specific. But we want to make sure that somehow that these two groups start intersecting with each other so that there's a bringing together, a closing of the gap between both of these two groups. Now, when we're talking about intergenerational ministry, we don't want to confuse that with family-based kinds of ministry. Because when we're talking about a family ministry-based approach, I mean, that's valuable and that's important, but that basically focuses on the nuclear family. And that is, you know, we're trying to help, you know, moms and dads raise their kids up in the best way. And that's very important. But that's working very specifically with nuclear family units. But we want to think more broader than that today. We want to have a broader definition of what we mean by family. A definition that sort of, you know, brings together the entire adult community that we might have within our church. And so let's think about family. What do we mean by family? In her book, Family Ministry, sociologist by the name of Diana Garland, she identifies two ways to think about family. The one way is to think it in terms of a structural definition. And when we think about family, we think about marriage, we think about birth, maybe adoption, we're thinking about divorce, remarriage, and all the other variations that might be there. You know, step-parent children, single parents, elderly parents, living with an adult child. We see more of that happening today. And under this definition, when you have, when you think of family structurally, ministry is focused on strengthening those structural relationships. And so we want to make marriages healthy. We want to make parenting healthy. We want to help people deal with, you know, after they've gone through a divorce and they perhaps have remarried, how we can help them, you know, to be strong in that, helping single families. And that's focused very much on the structural definitions of family. But she said if we want to be really effective, we have to think of family in terms of a functional definition. And a functional definition views family through the unique functions that certain relationships happen within a person's life. And so we see that within a church, for example, where there are people who are loving each other, they're being faithful to the same Lord, they're adopting one another as brothers and sisters in the households of faith. In other words, any adult may function as a child's parent or grandparent, and any child may be able to function as your child, your spiritual son or daughter, even if you're not biologically related. And this is what Garland says as she employs this functional definition of the family. She says, the structural approach tends to cut up a congregation into homogeneous groups, you know, groups that are the same, so that all the married couples are grouped for ministry, So you have the married couples they have there, and then you have singles ministry, and then so on. And what happens quite often in a congregation is that you get congregations that begin to specialize. And so, for example, Westside might be known as a congregation for young married people. And you might have, you know, Forestdale, that's a church for, you know, young adults. If you want a family-based ministry, you might go to Gosnell's. I mean, because that's what they're all about. And so you have churches that begin to specialize in one kind of ministry or another. And what often happens, though, in those types of churches is that people say, well, my needs are met because that's kind of a church that focuses on single ministries. And yeah, but I'm not really single, so I need to go to a church that might focus more broadly, or maybe would start to meet my needs, and people start moving on from church to church. But the functional definition fits in a lot better to the way that Jesus understood family, what he taught about family. Because as Jesus talked about family, he talked about followers of Christ are not necessarily bound by the structures that are legally recognized, like a marriage or a family or biologically based relationships, but relationships that function more relationally. Loving one another, being faithful to one another, adopting one another as brothers and sisters in Christ. And we see that throughout the Bible, for example. You know, if you go back into Genesis and you have, you know, therefore a man will leave his father and mother and will cling to his wife and they will become one flesh. The kind of flesh relationship, this structural relationship. But then when Jesus, you know, was on earth, he talked about family in a functional way. He says, whoever does the will of my Father is in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother. In other words, my family, Jesus said, are those people who, you know, join in with me in this relational way, this relationship with God, very much spiritually. And so Jesus reformed the idea of family, simply the way that we see that, even the way that Jesus came into this world, you know, born of a virgin, and you know, and had this relationship with Joseph, who sort of adopted him as his child. And we see this later on pointed out, you know, as Jesus taught in Matthew 12, is that those people who do my will, the will of my Father in heaven, those are people who I'm related to as a family. And so from this vantage point, you know, no one must be without a family because, you know, your womb might be barren. You know, you might have families within your church, you know, a couple that have never had kids because they just couldn't have kids. But that doesn't mean they don't have a family. Or marriages that are broken or marriages that never have formed. It doesn't mean that they don't have children or they have relationships that they can get in contact with. Or those who lack a structural family. A functional family fills the human need that we have for connection and support. And I love what it says in the Psalms, right? It says that God sets the lonely in families. And thinking more broadly in terms of a relationship, you know, that we have a relationship with other people that become our brothers and our sisters, our mothers, our fathers, our children. When Jesus hung on the cross and he was going to leave, what does he do? He points to John. And what does he say to John the apostle? He says, you see Mary? Behold your mother. And he points to Mary and says, you see John? Behold your son. You know, might not be biologically connected, but Jesus says, you have a relationship with each other that you gotta take care for one another. Or as Paul, you know, he calls Timothy, you know, his dear son. Not biologically related, but yet Timothy was very much a son to Paul. We see this in the church. The church in a number of places is called the household of God. It's a family kind of image that we do have. We all share one Father. Yep.
Material on the screen has some very interesting points and lots of good text. These tests are available as a printout.
Yeah. I'll make that all available for you. Yeah. So you don't have to necessarily write that down if you need to, because I got a lot more for you. Okay. So the functional definition of a family honors and values the significance of the traditional family unit while acknowledging that there is also a place for single parents and divorced individuals and singles and others, within the faith community. And the community of faith is called to offer hope for those who are hurt by the structural family relationships by providing a family in which healing and acceptance can be found. So again, I just want you to reflect on that for a moment. When you think about Gosnell's Church, and you think the way that you do ministry, what definition of family do you design your ministries around? Do you design them around a structural definition or a functional definition? Now, just bounce that back to me a little bit. What do you reckon here at Gosnell's? What definition do you basically work with? Structural or functional?
Probably functional. Which is nice that our groups are at the same time. They operate within the structure.
Okay. Because when we look at faith and family in the Bible, the one thing we notice that among the Israelites is that they are a relational community. It's not so much focused on in terms of a structure, but very much on relationships. In other words, that children were very much an important part of the faith development within the Israelite community. Children were included in all the rituals and all the faith celebration. The Passover celebration is one of the key, the times that the children really got involved because they all participated in the celebration of the Passover. In fact, the children have a key role in the Passover celebration. It became an opportunity for all the generations to come together and to reflect on faith and what the deliverance really meant for them as a believing community. And so, within the Israelite community, we saw the importance of intergenerational ministry. And the kind of ministry that basically happened within the Israelite community is that the parents and the children would be available for one another. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is that of Abraham and Isaac, in Genesis 22, you have Isaac and Abraham, they're going up Mount Moriah and, they're going to bring a sacrifice to God. And as they're walking along the way of life, Isaac says to his dad, we've got wood and we got fire, but where's the animal for the sacrifice? And Abraham explains to him, God will provide a lamb for the sacrifice. God will provide the animal for the sacrifice. Just as they walk along the way, we see faith developing and we see that as the end of that story, that's exactly what God did, right? God did provide a ram caught in the thicket for the sacrifice. We see that in Samuel's life. Here's not someone who is biologically related, but Samuel is in the contact with Eli, the high priest. And what happens in that story? Eli teaches Samuel how to hear the voice of God. Because Samuel had no idea of how to listen to the voice of God. I mean, what a beautiful story of seeing someone, here's a senior, taking a young child and helping that child learn how to listen to the voice of God. You see the importance of that in Deuteronomy 6, where, God teaches the Israelite community is that faith happens in relationships. How do we learn about to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength? Well, we're taught, right? Teach them to your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up, write them down, tie them to your hands as a sign, put them on your forehead to remind you, write them on the doorposts of your gates, of your homes. The whole emphasis, you know, in the Old Testament is very much on how we are to do faith in relationship, just as we do life with one another, in our homes, in our community, just as we walk, as we talk, as we sit, as we lie, we have an opportunity to pass on the faith to our children. We see the same thing happening in the New Testament with the early church. The early church was very much a relational community. We find, for example, in Acts, where the whole church is coming together, where they're worshiping and breaking bread and praying and ministering to one another in the context, not of a church building, but of homes, where they're meeting together in each other's homes and just doing life together. We see that children are clearly present in the life of the various households. You have the story of Lydia who, you know, where they're worshiping together and her whole household was baptized. The same with the Philippian jailer. You have the story of young Eutychus who is listening to Paul preach during midnight and how he fell out of a window. Probably fell asleep. But anyways, whatever happened, I mean, he fell out of the window and was raised back. Luke also tells us how when Paul left for Tyre, he was boarding a ship. There were children who were all gathered around there, bidding farewell to Paul. And so the kind of picture that you have of the New Testament is that you have adults and children are always doing life together. Ministry is happening in the context of homes and families and the church community, and everyone is involved. The whole religious community is described in the Bible as included the idea that children were actually present. They were involved in everything that they were doing. Oh, sometimes it's important to separate children, and it might be beneficial. But if children are going to experience authentic Christian community, they have to experience that in the context of the broader worshiping and gathered community. So let's think about some principles. As we think about, as we want to talk about multi-generational ministry in the context, let's think of just Gosnell's Church. Those churches that are involved on intergenerational ministries, they often emphasize four different principles. First of all, they talk about age integration. And what is meant by that is rather than separating into groups by age or grade level, because that's often what we do, right? We got, you know, Sunday school for, you know, grade 6 and 7 and 8. You know, we have young adults for, you know, between 20 and 25, and so things become age specific. Intergenerational ministry purposely teams people from different age groups, and so it's much more trying to integrate the different ages. Another principle is generational understanding. Relationships are fostered that reduce intergenerational conflict and misunderstanding, because that's often what happens, doesn't it, within churches. You know, the young people don't think that they're understood by the older people, and the older people, there's conflict with the younger people, but it's trying to build those bridges so that there's good communication and understanding. There's an integration of households. We're not just talking about the nuclear family. You know, or family units that are because of marriage or relationships biologically. But we're including all kinds of people into those households. Singles, widows, those who don't have any children, those who have lots of children. They're all considered to be part of being of family units. And finally, underscoring the importance of parental responsibility. That the ultimate responsibility for passing on the faith to the children is the responsibility not of the church, but it's the responsibility of the parents. And so parents are encouraged and equipped to take the primary role in the upbuilding or the raising up of their children's faith. So let's think about what that might look like in the context of this church. This is a statement that was found on a Babylonian stone tablet. It said, the younger generation no longer honors the traditions. They are going to destroy the culture. And don't we often hear something similar to that even in the life of our church? And I find those comments so often as I make my way around in the churches. You know, the older generation of the church says, the way the young people want to do things is just going to destroy the way that we've been doing things. We're not doing ministry the way that we used to do it, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. They're going to destroy our culture. But as we look at scriptures, what we notice very much in scriptures is that that kind of conflict doesn't seem to be there in scriptures. In scriptures, we see much more is that one generation lives with the other generations, and we see much more a continuity rather than a discontinuity. I love, for example, in Psalm 48, it says, "Walk about Zion, go all around it, count its towers, consider well its ramparts, go through its citadels, that you may tell the next generation that this is our God forever and ever." Or even more pointed in Psalm 145, it says, "One generation will commend your works to another." And so what we see happening in the scriptures is that generations are not separated, but very much generations are together. And if really healthy ministry is going to take place within the church, we need to see those generations come together so that there may be a passing on of the faith from one generation to another. Now, it's true that every generation maintains its uniqueness and other different strengths. But the heartbeat of God is that there is one church working together, the older with the younger, bringing generations together. And if that's ever going to happen, it's going to require humility, mutual submission, and a real respect for each other. And sometimes that means that, you know, we have to, just do some very straight talk. I love what Len Sweet, he was once talking to a seniors group. And he asked this question, he says, "How many of you grandparents love your grandkids? How many of you love your grandkids so much that you would lay down your life for them?" And, you know, the seniors, many of them raised their hands and they said, "Of course, we'll lay down our lives for our grandkids." And then he said to them, "How many of you love your grandkids so much that you will lay down your music for them?" How many of you would do that? How many of you would love your kids that you would just allow them, you know, to whatever happens within the church happen so that our grandkids would be able to love the Lord and serve Him?
What do you mean is that would you lay down your music?
Well, for example, I've been in ministry for a long time, and what I have experienced in churches is that you have your seniors who love singing this kind of music, and we have the younger folk, they like to sing something, you know, we have those conflicts even in the church where I am right now. And the seniors are much more the older generation. They say, you know, "We love to sing the hymns and the old songs and the book of worship or the Psalms." And, you know, the younger children, generation, you know, they grow up in a different culture, a different kind of music. It's not the organ. It's having different instruments and, more participatory kind of music. And they say, "Well, we don't want to change because this is our church and it's always been like this. And how are we going to bring those changes about?" I've heard this so often as I work with church. "I'm so proud to be part of a church that sees the next generation not as the church of tomorrow, but as the church of today." And I've been in churches that said that, but I often like to, you know, talk to the kids and say how wonderful it is to be part of a church where the older adults love and support you like the people of this church do. That's the kind of vision that you'd like to see within a church. You know, where everyone is supporting one another just so that we would be able to grow and to become everything that God intended us to be. So how do we build that bridge? a bridge between different generations. Well, there's two things. First of all, an intergenerational ministry brings diverse ages together in the same place with the same materials for the same purpose. So that's what an intergenerational ministry is. That's what I mean by that. It brings the different ages together in the same place with the same materials for the same purpose. And what's the goal? What's the purpose? Well, the purpose is to build cross-general relational ministries that strengthen faith formation in the community and at home. And so, in other words, it's going to leverage those relationships between the older and the younger folk so that there would be strong faith formation both in the community and also in the home. So how can we do that? I want to share with you some ideas of what that might look like in the local church. First of all is bringing families together in their walk of faith on Sundays. How can we do that? There's different ways that we could do that within a church. I mean, what happens on a Sunday is, you know, we have a pastor that, you know, preaches a message, and, you know, we celebrate that in the locus of the of that church. But how does that relate to everything that happens throughout the rest of the week? Well, what about if the sermons that were preached on a Sunday, let's say in the adult service that you might have, which is quite often adult folks, although you might have a children's message, what about that those sermons are aligned with the children and youth ministries? So that what is taught, you know, in the Sunday school programs, what is taught in the youth groups, is very much in line with what happens on a Sunday. So what happens on a Sunday morning when the sermon is preached, that message is also lived out in the rest of the week in the various programs that you have within youth ministry. What about if in the life groups where you meet together, maybe with different generations coming together, that they also, you know, discuss the sermons, you know, throughout the week, so that what is lived on Sunday is not just, you know, just focused on Sunday, but, you know, something that we live with 7 days of the week, 24 hours of the day, is something that we live throughout the week. What about encouraging youth participation in worship? You know, so that the worship service is not so much seen as an adult thing, but very much where children are also involved. How? Well, doing simple things like reading scripture, greeting at the door, collecting offerings, distributing bulletins, getting involved with video or with sound or with lighting. Some churches get into that. Getting involved with the music. So the music is not just driven by the adults, but also by young people, by children. That there are special services, for example, that the seniors might put on, you know, for children, and that the children might put on for seniors, where you see the cross-generation of children coming together. Building the bridge. Allowing their walk of faith be much more than just something, just coming to church on Sunday, but something that's lived out in all areas of our life. What about encouraging youth in leadership? When was the last time that you might have had, let's say, some of your young people sit in on a session meeting? Where they would just come in and just experience what it's like for people to give leadership within the church. Or to have young people at a classes meeting. You know, when I was pastoring in Canada, we often had young people start attend our classes meetings. To come there, to experience what church is all about. How we do church. What about having young people have a voice at Synod? When Synod meets every 3 years. In the Christian Reformed Churches in North America, this is an experiment that they've been doing over the last number of years, is that at the synodical meetings, they actually have youth advisors that sit in on the synodical meetings. So that the children are not just seen as just spectators, but they're actually involved. Some years ago, we went to this forum in Canada where we got together to talk about the future direction of the Christian Reformed Church in Canada. And one quarter of all the participants of that conference were under the age of 18. And we had several hundred people there. But they were asked to be part of our discussions and thinking because they had a place around the table to think about the future of the church. Or how many children, for example, are involved in at the committee levels of the church? So you have a stewardship committee in your church, or a building committee, or you're calling a new pastor, and you're thinking about, you know, the kind of person that you would, how many young people are involved on those committees? Or you're putting together worship services. How many young people sit on your worship committee to help give their input in, also into how the worship can be done? So, see, we're talking about intergenerational ministry so that youth are not just, you know, well, we just take them along and when they grow up then they can finally have a voice, but to bring them right along as they start talking and they start asking questions and they start seeing faith lived out in all aspects of the church, bringing families together. Intergenerational ministries focuses on equipping parents to lead their faith family development. It's sad today, but this is a reality that parents are so used to the church planting their children's faith development that they, as I talk to a lot of parents today, they don't even know how to pass on the faith to their children. One of the guys that I've been discipling over the last couple of years, you know, when I started chatting with him, he didn't even know how to pray. He was a cadet leader, and, you know, and he had four children, but he himself didn't know how to pray. And I thought, here you are, you know, working with young children, you have children of your own, but you don't even know how to talk to God. So how can you help them talk to God if you yourself don't know? But what's been happening so often is that we relegate the faith formation of our kids to churches or to the Christian school. Now, they'll take care of that. They'll pass it on to our kids. But the solution that we need is that we need to equip parents to lead their families' faith development. Here's an idea. One church, for example, what they did is that we want to start equipping families. And so what they had in their church is that every year they would host a devotional fair. And what that simply was is that they got everyone to come to the church and they would show them all kinds of Bible studies, you know, different models for instruction, devotional resources. And they had all of these things on display, you know, around. And they would have, at each station, parents were invited to come there with their children and try some of this stuff out. So that when they would go home, that they would know, you know, what kind of material works best in their family in terms of doing family devotions, of having that family altar where they would gather around and they would worship God together and pray together and read scripture together. Another church, for example, they switched their parenting class curriculum to one that helped parents become the primary disciplers of their children. And that's so critical, isn't it? That, you know, we need to be the primary disciplers of our children. And so what their church started to do is that they said, you know what, we want parents to be involved in all our youth meetings. And so they got their parents involved, you know, in gathering together in the various youth ministries. And the message was stressed from the pulpit that they wanted to make sure that all generations were involved in the learning process. Here's another idea. One church, and they would bring families together for what they called a family home adventure. Once a month, they would come together as a church, and they would just divide everyone up together, and they would all sit around tables, and they would make sure that they would have people gathered together as families. And in those families, there would be not just nuclear family, you know, just as families that are based on structure, moms and dads with their kids, But widows would be there, and singles would be there, and young adults, and people that didn't have any children, they would be included. And they would sit around the table, and they would eat food together. But they were also taught how to get involved in praying together as a family. Because, you know, let's be honest about it. You know, many of our families don't do that anymore. They don't sit together around the table, where they open and close with prayer, where they read scriptures with each other. That's becoming less and less a reality in so many of our families. And what can we do to help foster and equip our parents so that when they go home, that they actually understand how to do this, how to pray? I don't know how many times, whenever I'm invited somewhere, they always ask me to pray. Well, that tells me so often that they're probably not doing a whole lot of that in their home, where they're having those family altars, those family devotions, family worship times together. Or another thing, another church, what they do, and what a lot of churches they do, they transform all of their activities into intergenerational events. I think back, you know, into my last church that I served, whenever the adults would go out to a sporting event together, they would always take their kids with them. So they would see a footy game. Well, back there we went to see the baseball game. Well, we would make that a father-son deal or a father-daughter deal. And we would gather together at those events. Why do you do that? Because it's so important to bring the generations together. So it's not just us blokes going out to do our thing, but we're bringing our kids along so that they can experience it together. Or when we as men would go out, for example, back in those days, we had these, do you have Promise Keeper events here? Well, we had that in America, in North America. We had Promise Keepers where all these, you know, 20,000-30,000 men would come together for this convention, you know, for 2 or 3 days. Guess what? We always included a lot of our young people to come along with us. Or maybe in a more local level that you would have, you know, your gems and your cadets that they would go out on these campouts. But it wouldn't just be the leaders that would go, but that other moms and dads, all of the moms and dads would be invited to come along for this event. So it's very much an intergenerational thing that happens. Not just age specific, not just boys or girls specific, but getting the generations coming together. You know, the single most important thing in intergenerational ministry is to include the non-nuclear family units. And we need to be honest about that again, is that we're seeing this in an increasing a reality within our day-to-day. There are a lot of broken families, a lot of single moms, a lot of broken marriages. What can we do to envelop some of those people around? And it's so important to not talk necessarily about families, but about households. And that includes widows and single parent families and all of those together. I think that is so critical. I think that, you know, we in the church, we need to be very sensitive to be involved with ministry to what the Bible calls the orphan and the widow. People that don't have, you know, maybe they have an absentee father, or there's a broken marriage and a child doesn't see their dad or doesn't see their mom. But we as a church need to become a mom or dad or grandpa or grandma to them. I just gave you an example. Every week, we have this little girl over at our home. Her name is Charlotte. And, you know, we've been doing this probably for the last 2 or 3 years. Her mom and dad split up, you know, probably 3 or 4 years ago. Shortly after she was born, and you know, her father doesn't have a major role in her life, not at all spiritually, but doesn't have any role. But once a week, we have Charlotte and her mom over at our house. And why do we do that? Because we want to be a dad to Melanie, her mom. We want to be a grandparent to Charlotte, and This picture was taken last year as she went off to her first day at school. Guess who was there? I was there. Why was I there? Because, you know, we have a responsibility within the church to make sure that these people are not forgotten, that they are those within the church that actually have a relationship with these children. That make sure that these people who don't have the regular family unit that we might have, to make sure that they have normalcy, where they can come together. And one of the greatest delights that I have every week is just to spend some time reading scripture with Charlotte and talking to her about her faith and praying together with her and her mom. Just having them at our house. And then the whole idea of mentoring, which is so critical. I mean, young people, they have this deep desire to connect with people from a wide variety of ages. And one of the best ways that we can do that within the church is through mentoring. Just walking side by side with others. I mean, that's how Jesus did his ministry. Jesus spent 3 years just simply eating, drinking, sleeping, walking, and talking with not just the 12 disciples, but with a whole group of people. He had the 12, he had the inner circle of 3, but then he also had the larger circle of 72 people, and then the crowds that would follow him. But Jesus just simply did life with people. And when he did life with them, there was opportunity for them to ask questions and to talk and to reflect on what does it really mean to be a God follower, to be a believer. You know, when people from an older generation invite young adults or young people into their lives, they have a great opportunity to nurture faith and to form faith in these young people. It's whether it's eating a meal or going to the movies or going fishing or having a conversation. Those natural circumstances of life provide an opportunity for us to really just simply do life with people. Now, the most important key is just intentionality, to be very, very, say, you know, we just need to do this. We from the older generation, we need to build relationships with younger people, with younger children, enter into a relationship with them. You know, I look at your 2/3 of your congregation who are professing and are communicant members and 1/3 that are not. You know, we should be able to see those people from, you know, who are from the older generation, they should be intentionally building relationships with some of these younger people, just pouring themselves into their lives. One of the other joys that I have in my life, this might be your own biological child or grandchild. You know, one of the greatest moments of my week is when I spend like I did last night. You know what I did last night? I spent an hour, about 55 minutes on a Skype call with my grandson in North Carolina. And I spend about an hour with him every week just teaching him church history. Just passing on to him everything that I know. Right now we're talking about the Middle Ages and the whole struggle of the steps that were leading up, you know, the 100-year war and, you know, the Black Plague, and all the struggles of the early church during the late Middle Ages. And we're talking about that. You know, well, he's 7 years of age. And I spend an hour with him every week just on Skype, just to pass on him. And you know the main question we were dealing with last night? We're dealing with what is the most important need right now in Liberia? Or I mean in Libya, you know, with all the breakdown of that society, and what can we as Christians do to impact North Africa with the gospel? And that was his assignment, one of the things that he had to talk about with me last night. So we spent about an hour on the phone last night. And why am I doing that? Because I think it's so important that we from the older generation need to pass on what we know about God and Jesus and the Bible and God's ways throughout history, so that one generation will commend the acts of God to the next generation. It's so important for us in the older generation to have those relationships with younger people. You know that yourself. Why do trades have apprenticeships? And medical professions require internships? Because they know that you need to put people who are experienced with people who are learners. And they need to be able to pass on their experience on to those who are learners. And we see that throughout the Bible, don't we? Of the different mentoring relationships. We see that with Moses and Joshua. We see that with Elijah and Elisha, with Naomi and Ruth, with Paul and Timothy, Jesus and the disciples, and the list goes on and on. Of those that have much more experience passing on, commending the works of God from one generation to another. Well, what is a mentor? Well, a mentor is really this. It's just very simple. A mentor is someone who has a brain to pick, an ear to listen, and a push in the right direction. A brain to pick, an ear to listen, and a push in the right direction. You know, when we think about our society today, which is so fragmented, we see the speed of change demanding, you know, the constant learning of new skills. I mean, we just talked about that over breakfast this morning, didn't we? We talked about, you know, how IBM used to, have this, you know, five-story, you know, building, you know, that housed all their computers years ago. And now my newest BlackBerry probably has more capability than those five stories, and storage capacity and everything else. And now, you just carry it on your belt. Everything's changing so rapidly. And with our mobile society, it's forever separating the extended family. I mean, I have kids that are all over the world. Now, I'm thankful that we have modern technology today that I can still keep in touch with my kids and grandkids and pass on the faith to them. But it just underscores the need for mentoring. How important it is for us to, from the older generation, to build relationships with the younger generations. I mean, all of us who are in the older generation should have a one-to-one, face-to-face relationship with a younger person every week, where we are passing on to them what God has passed on to us. I think about in my own life, when I came to Australia 3.5 years ago, one of the first things that I got involved in, I just started talking to my pastor, and I said, what kind of discipleship program do you have in this church? You know, what are you doing in this church from the older generation to pass on the faith to the younger generation? We're not talking about worship service, not talking about cadets and gym, we're not talking about all the educational programs, because that often deals with the heart stuff, right? But what are we doing with this one-to-one kind of relationship with other people so that we can pass on the heart stuff? So we can really just see growth happening in the lives of them. He said, we have nothing happening. So we got to get that going. We got to have a discipleship program, a mentoring program in this church where, you know, we're face to face with people. And so we started implementing some of that. And I started meeting my first year with a couple of blokes. And it's interesting to see, you know, one of these fellas, he caught on to it and he started passing on the stuff that I was passing on to him. And he was, you know, he's about 15 years younger than I am. And he went and passed it on to someone that was 15 years younger than him. That person right now was just hired on as the chaplain, you know, in our local Christian school and hired part-time at our church as a young adults pastor. How did that happen? It happened, you know, over, you know, 2 or 3 year period where you're just passing on the faith to another person and raising up leadership on the other end. Right now I meet fortnightly with two guys, and all I do is just simply passing on the faith to these two guys so that they would be able to pass it on to the next generation. And these guys are, you know, about 20 years younger than me, but they need to know the stuff that I know, and I need to pass it on. And we need to be in that face-to-face relationship with other people where we can do that, not just with our children and grandchildren, but also to those that are disconnected within our faith community. Isn't that what the Bible teaches? This is what Paul says. He says, I want you to teach the older women to be reverent in a way that they live and not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good, so that they can train the younger women to love their husbands and their children, See, now we see the process. You got the older women, they just teach the younger women. All the old women in the church, they need to have a face-to-face relationship with younger women that they may be able to pass on what they know. And again, it's not, this is the stuff that has to happen intentionally, that we seek out those relationships so that we can pass on what we have. That's what Paul said to Timothy as well. You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that you heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, you now need to entrust, need to pass it on to other people who also will be able to pass it on to the next generation. That's just one generation commending the works of God to the next generation. That's intergenerational ministries. And Paul is saying this to Timothy. It wasn't his biological son, but it was someone that he had entered into a relationship with and passed on the things that he knew so that Timothy would be able to pass it on to others. So what are the benefits? You know, I don't know if you, if you right now are in a mentoring relationship. I don't know if you are. And I'm not going to ask you to tell me, but just got to consider that for yourself. But who do you have right now that every week or fortnightly you meet with just so that you can pass on what you know, everything that you know about God, everything you know about what it means to be a leader in the church, everything you know what it means to be a good husband or a good father, that you're passing it on to the next generation? How many of you have that kind of relationship? Well, I want to challenge you to do that. And I tell you, those things are the highlights of my week. If you say, what floats my boat or put airs in my tires? It's when I hang out with Charlotte and Melanie and I just be able to spend time with them, just being a dad and a granddad to these, do it every week. Just hanging out with my grandchild, you know, every week. Just passing on to him the faith. So that he would grow and learn. Tell you a story. A little while ago, I told my grandson, I was telling him the story of where God had answered a prayer, a very specific prayer in a person's life that I was dealing with. Because I share with him the joys and the struggles that I have in my own faith life. And I was telling him of a real answer to prayer that God had given to me. And on the other line, my little grandson says, "Praise the Lord." And I thought, you know, to hear that from your granddad, I mean, nothing warms up the heart of a granddad more than, you know, hearing that kind of stuff from your grandchildren. But, you know, you walk with them. That's a highlight of my week. And you know, fortnightly on a Thursday night, I did that just a couple of nights ago, just spending time with these two blokes for an hour and a half. And just this past week, we talked about love. Just what love is in the Bible and how that's to be the mark of a Christian and how that's to be lived out. And we talked about that. Those are the highlights of my week. Just being able to see these guys growing in their faith and taking hold of what God had taken hold of me so many years ago. So real benefits. First of all, you know, one of the benefits that you have, I mean, I don't know about you, but so often when we go about our day-to-day work, John probably doesn't have this in his work, but the rest of you guys probably have that in your work. You get so frustrated because you so often don't see the fruit of your labors. You don't really see some good outcomes, or you just wonder, are you really making an impact in your life? Well, if you want to have a sense of significance, you know, that you are really doing something, you know, enter into a mentoring relationship with a younger person. And that ought to spread throughout the whole church where people are in those good. That just really boosts up, you know, your sense of self-worth, that you're actually doing something that's of importance. And the second benefit is your own personal growth. I must tell you, you know, one of the greatest benefits that you have of being a mentor with somebody is just seeing your faith, your own faith grow. Because as you have them memorize scriptures, so you also memorize scriptures. As you teach them the things of the Bible, it becomes more solid and you are more convicted of it in your own life. As you pass on the things to other people, you know, you realize that there are areas in your life that are not, you know, fair dinkum and that you need to deal with some things. And God convicts you of some things as well. And And you work on those things, and together you grow. And it is such a wonderful benefit. So what do you do when you spend some time as a mentor? The most important duties of a good mentor is just to ask the right questions. And again, I'm going to make these available for you. I'm going to go through this very, very quick, so you don't have to write it down. But a mentor is not someone who is the answer person, but the one who gets the mentoree to do some really helpful self-reflection. And so you ask some challenging questions. You ask things like, how is your ministry or job affecting your relationship with God? How is your sense of God's call being clarified in your life? What are your skills being tested? Where is your character being tested? What are your hopes and dreams for your future? How can I help you? What evidence can you point to the presence and power of God in your life? As you assess your growth, where do you see areas you need to work on? What are your felt deficiencies? What are some new things that you can try? What? Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. What pain have you experienced, and what were some of the effects of that pain? How has that shaped who you are? How might God use your past to prepare you for ministry or service in the future? I'm just asking some pointed questions and not asking those questions every time you meet, but asking a bunch of those questions each time you meet so that you're continually growing and seeing growth happening. Just doing life with one another. There's no shortcuts to mentoring. Mentoring is not for the impatient. While it's one of the most effective means of developing effective Christians, it's also very time-consuming. You know, we live in a culture where we want everything instant, especially here in Australia. We don't have, wonderful, cappuccino or espresso machines where we have to wait in line. Oh, we might do that at a cafe, but at church, everything's instant, right? We get our instant coffee and pour up the packet and put it in. And so often in our lives, we live in an instant world. We want everything just like that. I tell you, that doesn't happen with mentoring, with discipling. It happens over a long period of time, and you need patience. If you're trying to help someone to understand things theologically correct, you're trying to build godly character, as you're helping a person become competent in the ministry that they might be involved in, there's no shortcut. The first mark of a Christian is the mark of what? What did Jesus say? By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have what? Love, right? The most important mark of a Christian is love, right? And the first mark of love is what? Patience. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. It suffers long. That's what the word actually means. And when you and I are involved in passing on the faith to other people, it means sticking with them. I mean, there's many times where I've wanted to give up on people and just pack it in because they're not growing. But you got to hang in there. You got to hang in there and keep those meetings up. Keep asking the questions. Keep developing that relationship. Why? Because love is the mark, and the best way of mark of love to live out is through being patient. And as a mentor, you're never without a ministry, and that's such the beautiful thing about mentoring. I know you have a number of people, in your church that, are long past retirement. But there's no such thing, as retirement when it comes, to being a Christian, when it comes to ministry. One of the most beautiful things that seniors can do, they have the time. They have the experience. And the best thing that they can do is enter relationships with younger people. So that, the younger would meet with the older people and they would be able to pass on the experience. One of my best friends just died last year. He was 91 years of age. And, and I would spend, I don't know how many hours with him, in my last congregation, just hanging out with him. And, he was many years my senior. But I love chatting with him because he held me accountable, because he would pass on the stuff that he knew from way, way back there and his lifelong experience, and he would pass that on to me. And I cherish that relationship, and I really miss him today. But I mean, we need to have those kinds of relationships with people who are older than us who can pass on what God has known to us. And so as a mentor, you're never without a ministry. Okay, let me just, this is my last thing I just want to share with you, and then we're going to break for morning tea and maybe have just a chance of reflecting on this a little bit. But let's just think about implementing an intergenerational ministry within a church. And you know what I'm talking about now, as I shared with you some of the ideas of what intergenerational ministry looks like. Getting young and old serving together and growing together in ministry. Now, if you have an intergenerational ministry, it can begin in one or two ways. Either the church, you know, can be founded on, you know, where we're going to have intergenerational values. I mean, we're going to make sure that whatever we do as a church is going to be all intergenerational. Or a church says, you know, well, we can't do that across the board, and we'll just sort of introduce it slowly, you know, just very slowly. Well, probably the worst case scenario is to introduce something slowly, because you're going to get a lot of resistance. There's often stiff opposition, you know, in churches where they try to introduce intergenerational ministries, because the cultural norm, it's common in schools and in most church environments, is to separate people, and especially children, by age. You know, older people have their stuff and the younger people have their stuff, but the twain don't meet. Not everyone's going to want to do that, and that's okay. And so as I work with churches, you know, I often encourage them just to make room for both. And you talked about that maybe that's the way things are at here in Gosnells, but maybe it needs to be moved in one way or direction or another, but to make room for both. That there might be some age-specific ministries that you might still have, but make sure that you get those cross-pollination. Maybe it's best done through mentoring, maybe it's best done through some event kind of things that you might have within your church that you talked about, but try to create those opportunities where those age groups can intersect with each other. And then you need to perhaps also consider what programs need to be cut, you know, in your church in order to make room for more intergenerational styles of ministries. You can't do everything as a church, and you might need to cut some things. You might need to say, well, if we really want to get serious about this, maybe we can't have, you know, this Sunday school program that we have. Maybe we need to do something a little bit different so that we would get much more of this kind of cross-pollination happening within our church. So that we don't only have the age-specific ministries, but we have much more cross-generational ministries. And then I just want you just to take a fresh index card for a moment, and then this is what we're going to end with. And just jot down a few names that you might think in your church. Who in your church, including parents and students, that's children, you know, do you think would be interested in brainstorming ideas for intergenerational participation? Let's say that you as a church want to kickstart some of this within your church. What are some people in your church you can just think of? You know, children as well as adults is saying, you know what, these are maybe some people that we could talk to come together and maybe put some ideas together that we as a church can get involved in more intergenerational ministries. Why don't you just turn to the person beside you and just share some of those names of those people that you've been thinking.